Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited about this episode today because we're going to be broaching a topic that a lot of you may have experience with, history with, know someone who has a history with, or struggling with addiction. And today I have a very good friend with me, James, who's going to share a little bit about his story, and we're just going to chat about the whole process. And I hope you are able to take away some value and some key points from this episode. So let's just jump right in. Hey, James, how are you?
Hi, Jenny. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. How's it going?
Doing well. Doing well. It was a warm day in Ottawa, Ontario, but it was a nice day outside to work on the gardens and stuff. It was great. Nice day.
That's awesome. I love that. As I've been getting a chance to know you and discover a lot about what you do there in Ottawa and just getting in touch with you and becoming more aware of what you're doing as an individual and a little bit about how you got to be where you are. You had revealed a little bit about your history, and that you had struggled a bit with a addiction in the past. And thank you for sharing that with me and with us. Thanks for trusting us to share that with us, because I know that that can be a big thing for a lot of people to talk about, whether they're just in the midst of going through addiction or in the early stages of recovery, or if there are 5, 10 years into recovery. So for our listeners, why don't you just, if you can, if you'd like to, just give us a little bit of background and I guess a little bit of your story if you want to share.
Sure. It is super important to tell your story because in recovery, I remember when I started. So I've been sober since August 27th of 2016. So this year will be seven
Congratulations.
years. Thank you.
Congratulations.
The best thing I ever did for myself. So yeah, well, I'll tell you all about it. The thing with I remember when I first went into the rooms. I was, I had just got arrested the night before. I spent a night in jail. I was high, I was drunk, and yeah, I basically remember not being able to open the door and leaving the because you can't leave, right? You're in jail. So that's when it sort of this my mind started racing. I didn't sleep. Obviously, you don't sleep when you're there, I just remember I just couldn't open the door. Like I couldn't just say I'm leaving, and then when I got let out and told my partner what happened, and she's been with me ever, like for even before the time I was a drinker all those years, went to a meeting that night, got my first chip, which is the promise chip. It's a white chip, and just it's basically 24 hours of sobriety. That's what you promise to yourself, and that's the big thing with AA or NA is it's 24 hours at a time, one day at a time. So the big thing I remember taking from it, so I went to a meeting every day for 90 days. So the key was with that is I didn't have a license, so I was taking the bus, and at 35 years old, you sort of are humbled. Right. And you're sort of thought of as, I was this, I was a very popular person all my life. I was an athlete. I was fun. I was a good person and all that, but I had demons, and going to those meetings really helped because I was very quiet. I was very ashamed. And the people that were speaking there was people that have been sober for 35 years, and then there's people like you're saying, there's people over in that 5 to 10 period, and then I was one day, and then it's crazy to say that now, like you're like, fuck, one day. Oh, am I allowed to swear on this, Jenny? Is that okay?
Is that? Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
Okay, yeah.
same
Okay,
insurance
so
applies.
I may slip the odd F word, and it's just
Yeah,
fine who I am.
it's real talk. We're real people, real talk.
Good, 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 yeah. So that it was helpful because you heard stories and you heard what these people went through, and some stories were way worse than mine, and it not that it I felt like I needed that to make myself feel better,
right?
But it did make me feel like I was in the right place, because you know, there was just so many different stories. And I think I mentioned to you when we discussed it on another show, was and when we chat all the time, is just like being in that room is like therapy. It's like free, it's like free therapy. So when you're feeling like, I find when I'm feeling edgy or I'm upset about something or I'm having a tough time, I go to a meeting. And many people in recovery will probably say the same thing, is that so you get in that room, you read from the big book, you'd say a couple prayers together, whether you're religious or not. It's always stated, like, you can believe or you don't, but this is how we do it. And that's just the way it is. And you know, fine. So, and I happen to be religious, but that was just sort of a good thing that came from that. And yeah, it's just been a journey. It's been such an amazing thing. I think it was just, I love talking about it because it is me giving back to my community of in recovery, because that's part of it. Yeah. It's all about the people. It's so amazing. Like there's nobody, you go to a meeting, it's all coordinated by volunteers that are sober, and you sit in a room and everybody shakes hands, everybody says hello, everybody does this, hi, I'm James and I'm an alcoholic, you know, and everybody chats and has a discussion of how they're feeling, and it's really uplifting, you know.
Absolutely. If you don't mind, if we could go back just a little bit before you got into the meetings and the recovery piece. Was drinking always a part of your life, or from a certain age, or was there something, you know, that sort of brought it on and kicked it into high gear? And when did you kind of realize, did you know you had a problem or an issue with alcohol before the moment you got arrested and you were just kind of coasting through? What was that process like?
For sure. Yeah. I actually happened to go to a meeting before that, and I wish I stayed, but the thing was, is, you know, your bottom is when your bottom hits. So I wasn't ready for it then. I wasn't open-minded. I didn't think I had a problem. You know, what I thought was, I'm a drinker, you know, and I'm fine. You know, I have two jobs and I have, you know, I show up on time and doesn't matter how hungover I am. It doesn't matter, whatever. I'm showing up, you know, and then that one day, the next day I didn't show up. So I figured it out pretty quick. But no, not always. I was a big athlete when I was a young man. I was a good athlete. I was good at baseball and hockey and golf. And now, because I come from affluence whatsoever, I come from single mom and I worked at a golf course. So I learned that way. I just want to say I'm not a golf course, you know, kid there. But
so you weren't brought up with a silver spoon in your mouth.
Correct.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's just make I had that a wonderful notable point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have an amazing mother. I'm a lucky guy. My father and I weren't like a crazy close relationship. He left my mother when I was very, very young. And unfortunately, he died when I was 17. So I didn't really a real great relationship. I knew of him, and I have older siblings that are on my dad's side that, you know, idolized him. And I get that. And I see all the good things about him. But I also had some angst because he did leave. And that didn't spin the drinking. But drinking really happened more when I turned like 19 and 20. I was working at the Lone Star, which is a bar here, restaurant, legendary place in Ottawa. It's everywhere now. But this was like the only one in Ottawa. And it was like a big deal for me, because I remember going there as a young guy with my brother, who is, we'll get to him, is the that was the greatest guy in my life, my father figure, then became, like, you know, my best friend eventually. You know, he memories of him taking me there, and then I got a job there, and then I worked there for a long time. And you know, drinking was part of that culture, right? Like, you're in the bar industry, you know, you're going to have drinks, and that's part of the deal. And then eventually it went, like, and I always smoked a little bit of weed, and that was kind of part of the deal. And then eventually you get into the worst ones, like cocaine and stuff like that. Like, I never got crazy into that then, but I definitely tried it. Yeah, it was, you know, drinking was part of the culture. And then, you know, my 20s were a blast. I had a really good time. And but certainly made some stupid errors along the way, you know, drove while drinking and all the stupid shit you do when you're drunk. And
Right.
maybe not, it sounds like what I think is like everybody does this. Not everybody does it, but it definitely was part of what I would do. I would never cared. Like you know, I didn't think, I was like, oh, I'm fine. I'm just driving 5 minutes, you know,
Well,
after
and that's
10
part of
years.
the addiction too, right? That's part of the thinking. That's part of the process. When you're drunk, you think you're fine. And so it absolutely clouds your judgment for sure.
I think it's ego too, right? Like
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
you think you're indestructible, and yeah, and then as I turned 30 and then 31, so 31, I spent my 31st birthday. So I along those 20s, I lived with my brother Ross, 4 different times. So I'd live with him, and then I'd move out because I met a girl and I'm going to live with her and everything's cool. And then I got my own place and then I didn't want to live there anymore. So I went back and lived with my brother. And then I
Right.
did it again. So 4 times I did that. Until when I was 31, he died in a workplace accident in October
Oh, I'm
of
sorry.
2011. Yeah, that was, you know, he was my really like my best friend, father figure. He's 17 years older. So,
Oh, wow. Okay. So there's
Like
quite an age.
a guy, yeah, he's a half brother, but it was certainly like, you know, the guy that I looked up to the most and loved the most, I would say. And then when that happened, you know, and then I had to move back with my mom, which was a crazy thing to do. You think, okay, but I was living with him and his wife and his, you know, I'm not going to stay there because, you
Sure.
know, your brother, right? You're not gonna live with your brother's wife. It's just not
Awkward
good.
town.
But yeah, very, very, yeah, exactly. Sounds like some stories that we've heard somewhere. So I ended up going back to my mother's, and I had just started dating who I'm still with, Megan, and you know, it was heavy, and I did the eulogy, and I met her mom at my brother's funeral for the first time, and all that stuff. And I was like, you know, I told her, you know, you can leave, you know, like this is. We're pretty new. We're only a month into this relationship, and if it's too heavy, I understand. And she stayed, so I was lucky. And after that, I really kind of went into a dark place. I put on a hard face for because my mom was a mess, and it really broke a lot of hearts. Like when he died, so you know, he had a 16-year-old son and a 13-year-old daughter who I'm very close with both of them, and
That's great.
I sort of pretended, you know. You're kind of getting through, but often you'd find me late at night in a very dingy, dark bar that you would never, I wouldn't be with anybody, you know, I'd be alone and you know, just sad, really. I was depressed and didn't deal with it, you know, I was sort of just putting it aside. And then a couple of years of that, and then eventually, once, like we mentioned, I got arrested, it sort of was my wake up call. Do you want to just live a life where you're not enjoying anything and you're just sad and you're drinking and that's the best part of your day? Or are you gonna fix yourself in a sense, right?
Yeah.
And I did. So far.
Do you think that getting arrested was the push that you needed to sort of say, okay, like, holy shit, this is okay, I'm in jail. Like, this has gotta, like, let me take stock of what's going on in my life. Do you think if that had not have happened, you would still be on the same path as you were, or did you find
Yeah,
yourself gaining sort of a willpower as the years went on?
I think I would have been worse. I could have probably been killed or killed someone or you know, or died of drinking or died of an overdose or something stupid. And
Right.
yeah, no, I think that definitely the arrest, and then it's weird to say, but the getting arrested was the best thing that ever happened to me. It's really true. It sounds really crazy, but
Yeah.
it's very true. Very, very true.
Well, I think a lot of people would say that too. I think a lot of people who have these experiences, these moments where they sort of come to and they think, okay, like I got to get my shit together. it's not a good look for me.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, there tends to be, you know, an impetus to that. There tends to be a moving force that says, okay, like, this is it, whether it be they get into an accident or they get arrested or, you know, someone leaves their life or comes into their life, which creates this light bulb moment, really. And just says like, okay, things have got to change. And that's kind of the first step, I think, really, is saying, okay, I got to change my life. And I think just taking stock and giving yourself credit for that is a huge thing, because there's a lot of people that will still go out and still drink and still do drugs and still think, you know, I don't have a problem. You know, I can do what I want. I can, like you said, ego comes into play, and they just think, oh, I'm fine. Like I have a high tolerance. I can handle it. I can, you know, drink this much and I'm fine, or I can do this much and I'm fine. And so I think admitting to yourself that you got to change your life and change your ways is such a huge step that, you know, people really need to give themselves a lot of credit for.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, you know, people, I know people that are still out there doing the same shit they've been doing for, you know, 40 or 25 years, like in their 40s now, as am I. And I think it was a great wake up call for me personally. And I think you hit it right on the head with people, you know, once they get a kick in the nuts, or they get, mm-hmm. you know, pick, you know, they get really in a position that they're not in control anymore. They really kind of look at themselves in the mirror, and it is a empowering thing for, you know, to be at a bar with your friends that you still love. You know, I've lost a lot of people along the way because they just, sure. That's part of it, you know, because they're drinkers and I'm not, and it's fine. You know, but all of my core friends, you know, they go out for a couple beers because I know I have one friend who could have one beer and be there for 3 hours. It's just like, drives me crazy. I'm like, how do you have just one beer? It's like, it's craziness. And he's like, bro, I'm driving. He's like, fair enough. You know, he thinks like a normal grown up, you know, whereas
sometimes grown ups. Yeah.
Well, if you're taking like a Subway or something different, like that's a different discussion. But anyways, he's one of those guys. And then I'm just sitting there enjoying myself. And then the cool thing about it is when your friends start getting out of hand, you can just, I'm going home because I can't, you know, it's like,
just ditch them.
I'm good.
Like eighth grade.
And see you later. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to take my bike home. See you later. No, but you get in your car and you go home. Right. And that's totally great, you know, cause you have that option, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. You're getting in a car and you're driving sober as can be. And you get home safe to your loved ones, you know?
Yeah. And you have that personal sense of accountability and personal control, which has got to feel great.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, it's been a blessing in all aspects of my life. I think I still struggle with some, you know, I get frustrated at times and have a bit of a, not, I don't have a fiery temper, but I certainly have a little one that
comes
out every now and then. Exactly that. I did that today. I was putting up baby gates. My nephew was visiting. I was putting up baby gates with him, and all of a sudden it's just like, you know, and my partner Megan says, I've said it many times, I said, oh, it's just part of the process, you know, you lose your mind when you're putting something together. So that's something I have to work on. But the thing that it has done for me is there's no lying. Like I don't lie ever. And
is that
I used
a lie?
To. Yeah, no, it's not.
Okay.
I had my fingers crossed. No, okay. it's something that comes with that too. Is you don't lie, and I think it makes you feel a lot better because you don't. There's no stories, right? Like you're not kind of. I remember lying about drinking, especially.
And sure.
Trying to remember all of the moving parts of that lie was so stressful, and you know. And now I don't have that that stress in particular. I have other stresses, but you know, it being the fact that I got in better shape. You know, I started thinking about what I was eating. I started thinking about more logically about other things. You know, I started reading more and going back to my roots, really, because I used to be a very studious kid. Even though I was a jock, I was curious. I loved to I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to, like, I really was
No,
interested in
don't do it.
no, I'm
Don't
good.
do it.
I'm good. I'm good. I ended up in real estate, as you know, but, like, yeah, it was the right choice. I was very curious. I wanted to
Yes.
find the answer, right? Like,
Sure.
and it's nice to go back to that because I'm remembering who I was, you know? And
Yeah.
when I, with the 20, my 20s, it was just sort of a big party, you know, and I had a great time. I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I had made amazing friends and met lots of great people. And I'm a Gen Xer, so we didn't have phones, which was great. We had cell phones, but not like, we didn't care about them. They were just in your pocket. Like, I just, you know, like, now it's
Right.
like I'm using it right now, right? So,
Right.
it's a wonderful feeling to be kind of, you know, it's almost like you can do anything, really. It sounds so cliche, but it's literally like, you know, like I was telling you when we chatted, I did a half marathon, you know, and I never did thought of that when I was younger. I was like, you know, I loved playing sports and that was my workouts. And of course it's a great workout, but to train for something and be regimented and to make sure that you accomplish the goal. That's the other thing. I'm a psychopath, but when it comes to competitiveness, like, I'm very competitive. So it is a good thing and a bad thing. So yeah. Anyways, yeah,
I feel
it
you
just
on that.
yeah. And you
Yeah.
see where I'm going with it. It's just sort of it's a great feeling to be in control.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you're in the midst of addiction, you feel like you have control, but everybody looking at you on the outside can see like you're not in control, but you can't recognize that. And it's a false sense of ego, a false sense of control. Whereas now, being sober, you can see with clarity the control you have. You can hear, you know, the words that are coming out of your mouth, and being sensical, and you can feel physically the control that you have over your body and your life and your thinking. And that's one thing I wanted to touch on. You brought it up briefly with, you know, your eating habits and things like that, but the lifestyle that also goes hand in hand typically with being addicted to any particular substance is you find yourself amongst a different group of people. I know, you know, people who are usually addicted to alcohol usually have a pretty standard sad diet, you know, which
Oh,
is
yeah.
usually, you know, tends to be packed with lots of sugars and fast foods and things like that. And so that all changes too. So how was that process? Because I know you mentioned, you know, you l losing a lot of friends. And I think that that's something that people should be aware of, is that you're not just stopping the drinking or the drugs. It's a whole lifestyle adjustment and change, which you sort of have to be prepared for, because it can feel scary and it can feel intimidating, but it's a necessary change, because when things are not good for you in your life, whether it be food, alcohol, drugs, people, if you don't change those things, nothing else will change.
Yeah, and it's so true. And you know, the people that stay are the ones you want to keep anyway. They want what's best for you, you know. And if what's best for you, and you tell them what's best for you is to be sober, then that's what you should do. And you shouldn't do it for anybody else, because you're gonna do it for yourself, and then you're gonna attract those people that are gonna be, you know, there's going to be shitty people. There's all kinds of people that are users and you know, alcoholics and stuff. I remember going to a bar in Ottawa and seeing the same people and sitting with them, and you know, and we're all doing the same thing, and you know, smoking cigarettes and you know, shooting the shit and doing, you know, other things and getting into blow or whatever you're doing. Like, it's like it's such a vicious circle, and you feel like you think, like you said, you feel like you're in control. But you're just automatically driving to that place, and then you're automatically ordering the same. People are giving you the drink that you always order because
Right. It's a
you become a
habit.
re you're a regular, right? And
Yeah.
it's exactly it. And it fuck, man, you're one of them now. And not that it, listen, people are regulars, and I made a lot of money off regulars because, you know, I worked in the bars, and that's how, that's what they chose to do, you know, and I'm choosing to change my, I was choosing to change the way I think and the way the way I live, and also to deal with my brother's death too, which, you know, was another thing. I was just masking and I was suppressing and I was being very Irish, and which I am, by the way. And the that's the other thing too about recovery, is there's a lot of Irish people. But
Love Irish
it's
people. No, certain Irish people yet.
that's right, that's right there. But like, you know, it's just it's taking control, and having, if you're losing people that only liked you because you were fun, or you lent them money, or you bought them a drink, or you know, you had a cigarette for them or something stupid, and then fuck them, you know, like, just do it for yourself. I mean, that's, you know, if I could say that to anybody, it's so worth it, because, you know, you'll feel better, you'll be more confident, and you're worth it. You're worth it. I tell that to people all the time.
How's the quality of your relationships changed
I'm
now
so
as opposed
present.
to, yeah.
I'm so present. That's the big change. The big change is I'm super present. So if I'm with my friends, or if I'm with Megan, or if I'm with my nephew, or if I'm with my daughters, so I have twin daughters, which is super exciting. And
That is exciting. I want to get to that too.
yeah, here we go. But I'm here. You know, I'm right here. You know, sometimes I'm sure you do it too. You're on your phone a bit and you're like, okay, put this away, and I have to look at someone eye to eye and enjoy the moment, right? Like, that's the thing too. That's a new addiction, I think, is phones, right? So anyways, we
Yeah,
won't get into that one.
absolutely. Absolutely. We can touch on that later, but this shows so true. Anything can be an addiction, right? Just
Yeah,
when you obsess about
exactly.
it so much. Yeah.
That's right.
Turner Classic
And
Movies is my new addiction.
nice, some real classics out
Some
there.
really good
You know,
ones.
my you sound like my mother.
That's
She
awesome.
loves
Thank you.
that channel. Hey, live your life, girl. No, it's a great station. I love it, actually. I've been watching the Yellowstone again, so that's my go-to.
I could not
I
get
just
into that.
I
I could
oh,
not
fair
get
enough.
into it.
Okay,
Yeah,
it's
I tried twice.
yeah, it's I think you should try again. I think you
Should
would really like it.
try a third time. Okay.
It's like Sons of Anarchy on horses, you know.
Sons of Anarchy was, oh, mint. I've watched
Oh,
that
so good.
like three times over. Yeah, so
Yeah,
good.
it's a great
Yeah.
show. That, like, there's a few doozies. And where was I? So yeah, no, I'm really present.
Yeah,
It's funny how that worked out.
you remembered the question.
So like, when I'm with my friends, or you know, even when we go to a game, or watch, you know, go to a Red Blacks game or a Senators game, and I'm with someone that I care about, you know, I'm right there. You know, I'll see 1,000 people that I know. There's a ton of drinking going on at both of those events, but you know, I'm just sort of walking through there and seeing people I know, and hey, you look great. And I remember hearing that a lot. I was like, once I got fit, and I was sort of, you know, my face kind of, I was a, because of drinking, I was like, you know,
Depuff. Yeah.
I was puffed away. I
Yeah.
depuffed myself. I wasn't smoking anymore, and I wasn't doing anything stupid like that. So, it is is confidence. Like, you walk through, and when you hear someone say you look great, or you, Angus, what's up, you know, and you know, oh, you want a beer, and I'm like, no, I'm good, you know, and that's the other thing. You just say, I'm not drinking, I'm good, and I'm okay. You don't have to say, like, go through this whole thing where, you know, I got sober in
Right.
2008, right? But you can say, like, I'm good, and thank you for offering, but I'm good. But the yeah, presence. I think presence is the key. That
Yeah.
was actually on my 1 year coin. It was presence.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
That's awesome. That's
because
awesome.
it said presence and permanence, because the two meant a lot to me at that time.
Yeah. So how is that sort of, I don't know if reintegration is the right word, but how is that going back into the social scene? I know some people I've talked to said they can handle being around people who drink now that they're sober. Some people have said, I can't be around it at all. Some people have said, you know, some people will say, well, I can have one drink. And I say, okay, well, then you're not sober. But you're kind that's of right. testing yeah. the limits there.
It's,
so
it's same, tell with, you. It's same with but, greed. Yeah.
So how is that for you? And how do you, what's your thought process on that? Like, how do you handle that?
It doesn't bother me. I worked, actually still continue to bartend as a second position every Saturday night at this restaurant in Ottawa. I'm a sommelier too, so I know a lot about wine and, and stupid shit like that. But yeah, I know. My one best friend, he sees me all the time. He's the best sommelier that doesn't drink. So I worked in a restaurant that was a high end place, and I worked one night a week right until the pandemic hit, and then when that hit, they called me, they're you coming back, and I was like, you know, I don't really want to anymore, because you know, I'm happy at home and I'm happy with where I'm at in my other career, and I didn't really want to wear a mask at work, which was, you know, not because it was not because I didn't agree with it. It was just that for 6-7 hours, and this is my money right here, I like love smiling and bringing lots of life to the, you know, I'm a big energy, right? So you know, I just felt like it wasn't for me anymore, you know. And then but for so booze and me are, we don't have a bad relationship. It's just that I can't drink it. that's the bad part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then your diet changes too, your lifestyle in terms of physical activity. Like, what were the biggest changes did you see or feel in your diet? Did you have a lot of cravings at first for like sugars and coffees? Yeah. Yeah.
I still drink a lot of coffee.
That's okay.
That's my own. Exactly. That's my only vice, really. I started taking this stuff called mud water.
I really want to try that.
It's good. It tastes good. It's like, you know, and then I had twin girls, and then coffee was it was lifeline. So then that's a big thing too at an AA meeting, is you'll see 1,000 types of cookies and coffee and right, because sugar is like, my sugar levels are probably off the chains. I wouldn't even know, like I never thought of being, you know, I was never diabetic or something like that. So and I know I did like sweets. I was always more of a salty guy. I like chips and stuff like that. But definitely my diet totally changed, because like you were saying, the next day you're hungover, you went for a greasy breakfast, or you went for McDonald's, or you did, you know, you got the Gatorades, and the, you know, you did what you could to feel better the next day. Right. And the other thing that I haven't done since stopping drinking is throw up. Believe it or not, because yay! I used to, it's like that Seinfeld
props
episode,
for
right?
Teeth,
like,
man.
Exactly. That was the other thing. I take care of my teeth and I take care of my face and doing video, you know. But it is you totally look at things differently, and you pay attention to what you're consuming, because I don't know, you're just healthier, right? Like you're thinking, why do I need to eat, you know, I still love French fries. I just have them once every 6 months or something like that. You know, it's not like, you know, like I used to have at least 3 times a week, maybe more. Right. It's just all of the things, but sugar was crazy. It was crazy how much I craved sugar. It was like Cokes and you know, drinking Pepsis and friggin' eating sour watermelons, which I never ate, but it was like, oh man, I'm gonna get a sour watermelon into me, or I'm gonna be an asshole for the rest of the day. Yeah. But it's like, it's literally, that's your body's going through withdrawals of sugar, right? Because you drank so much. Yeah. So there's
also those calories there too. So for people who don't know or haven't listened to any of the podcasts yet, so I actually started out in pre-med and clinical nutrition, and so there was a couple of takeaways that we, you know, really come to mind, especially with addiction. And one of them was you never take away an addict's sugar or coffee at the beginning. No. Because they need it and they rely on it, you know, just for the first like 3-6 months at least anyways, right? Definitely don't take away the coffee. And that's just because their body is just in in a crave mode, in a deficit. You know, they're all that you were drinking your calories basically, with all the booze, and it just destroys your gut biome. And anytime you have, you know, a leaky gut, and you've got, you know, scavengers in the gut, they're always going to be craving sugar too. So, and then your brain goes haywire too. So it's trying to get that, you know, that hit, right? So, yep. The quickest way to get that is through sugar, and coffee just won't perk you right up. So, yeah. So that's why I mention it. But so a lot of people probably will recognize that and resonate with that, is, you know, their cravings for sugar and how their diets changed since they've gotten sober. So that's a really great, thanks for bringing that up too.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, yeah, you just, you start making dinners, you prepare,
you cook,
right?
Stuff.
You're like making overnight oats and stuff like that. It's like,
fuck my nemesis. I hate overnight oat recipes. One of my pet
peeves. I'll send you a couple. Yeah. Really easy. Really easy. Yeah.
So one of my pet peeves in life is the wind and overnight oats.
The two.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
That's funny.
But it's so interesting to see the snowball effect in your life, both on the addictive side and the sober side, right? Because you start getting into addiction, you start drinking, it starts to snowball, you start getting out of control, your lifestyle changes, your habits increase, you know, you start getting into this snowball of like not a very good life, not a progressive life, nothing that's really good for you. And then when you get into the sober mentality, you know, your diet starts changing, your friends start changing, you get into the snowball of you, like you said, you take better care of yourself, you clean your teeth, you wipe your own ass, you wash your face, you know, like it's, and things snowball that way. So it's you choose your snowball, right?
Yep, that's right. That's a great way to put it, actually. Well done. Yeah, you for me, it was, you know, I continued to smoke cigarettes for a couple of years. A year after, just because it was something that took the edge off, and I was still addicted to it, obviously. But you know, I gave up that, right? And then once you do that, my first year was just trying to get through it, you know, and then as that one stopped, I sort of decided like, oh, I'm not gonna eat that. And, you know, people laugh at me now. It's like, oh, I won't order that. It's like we go for wings or something, and I'll have, you know, hummus, and they'll be like, what the fuck? You're ordering fucking hummus at a bar? And I was like, yeah, they have it, so I'm gonna have it. It's probably really fresh too, I'm sure. Yeah, because it gets ordered every time I show up there. But yeah, no, you just make better decisions. You're more in control. Yeah, that's the other thing too. I'm really control of my own choices, and that's what I told someone about. Like when I talked to my friends about sobriety, it's, I just really only control this person, like right mm-hmm. around here, and that's all I need to control, and that's what I do. I mean, it's a wonderful feeling, you know, just to be in control.
Yeah, and I think that's a great lesson for everybody too. I had a friend in college tell me that once, and I remember I was stressed about something, and he said to me, you know, I only worry about the things that I can control. And I never forgot that. You know, when I'm going through a difficult time, I think, okay, I'm upset, but is this something that I can control? If I can control, then I need to change it. If I can't control, then I just got to let it go.
It's the serenity prayer, right?
Yeah, like
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah.
Sorry, I live by that credo, man. It's
Yeah, I actually, that was actually a little picture that hung in my grandparents' home. So I remember reading
that. Wow.
I remember reading that as a little girl, and it was just, yeah. So, yeah, anyways. But But yeah, but it's hard to do sometimes, but I never forgot that lesson, and it's such a good thing to remember. So I was wondering if we could just kind of get into sort of the process of AA meetings and starting that. Could you take us through a little bit about how that all happens? And maybe someone might be listening to this that's sort of on the verge of wanting to go to a meeting and not sure the process of that or how they find a meeting. And when they get there, what happens? Like, fill us in a little bit about that kind of stuff.
They have a really good website. Like when I first got sober, I went to a couple of meetings here, and then we went to Vancouver. We actually went to Seattle and then Vancouver. And I continued to go to meetings there. So I was able to, you can look it up online. And I remember going to meetings, literally in meetings in Seattle, you know, and they're like, "Where are you from? Ottawa? Where is that?" You know, and they're like, you know, you're explaining all that crap. And then, yeah, I was just doing my 90 and 90 days. So I had to do it while I was there. And it's very easy to find meetings. They're everywhere. I know there's a ton in Toronto. There's a ton here in Ottawa. There's a ton, like if you Googled Alcoholics Anonymous, I think in any country, I think it's AA.org. And there's meetings every day. And if you go meet some, like if you feel uncomfortable, just sit there, just put your ass in the chair. And I promise that if you can do it one day and then another day and then another day, and you just keep going, you know, it's going to benefit you. If you're having a problem with anything, there's Narcotics Anonymous and there's Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're having an issue with, even if you think you're drinking too much, or if you don't think you're drinking, you know, you're just having one drink a day and you think that's too much, and you think that it's you, I'm not alcoholic. It's like, well, go for the fact that you can just sit your butt in the chair and listen to some stories of these people that are this, like, you know, success stories now, including myself, you know, and in all facets of life. And you know, I'm grateful every day because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful that I caught it in time and sort of was able to have the courage to go and sit there. And that's a really thing. It's you're courageous to go to a meeting because it's a big fucking deal. Like, it's like, you know, you're really as vulnerable as you're ever going to be. Like, you've just decided that you have a problem and you need to fix it. So there's only one way to fix addiction. There's only one way, and that's meetings. There's no other way. You can't fucking do it on your own. You can't say, I'll be fine. I'll just do it on my own.
Yeah, because some people have that mindset. Well, I'll just quit cold turkey. I'll just quit. I just won't drink anymore. Okay, fair enough. Let's see how that goes. But there's all the other facets that come along with that. And like you said, going to a meeting is kind of like therapy, because it's not just about, you know, not drinking. It's about dealing with all the shit around the drinking.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not just you're right. It's not the drinking. It's everything that's inside of you that's been bubbling. And, you know, you hated your dad, or you had a bad relationship with your sister, or you got molested as a child, or something bad happened to you, you know, or, you know, and something, maybe something didn't, but you just drank a lot, you know. But either way, you get your butt in that room, and it's super scary, but I promise that the benefit at the end is the way to go. Cause anybody could say, like, oh, I'll just stop drinking. I did it. I tried it many times. I said, I'm stopping. I'm done. You know, like, it's the cliche thing, you know, I'm not drinking and never drinking again, you know. And I've heard it many times, and I said, well, you should go to a meeting. I was like, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm like, okay. You know, and I don't
push people.
Up to you.
Yeah.
You know, it worked for me. It's up to you. And I've had people that have gone to them with me, and now I can't get a hold of them. So that just tells you they're back, right? And they're out there again. So it doesn't always work.
Right.
But if you go enough I was lucky. I worked the first time. If you go enough and you continually go and you kind of take care of yourself, you'll come through it. But there's a lot of people that go and then go back out. You know, that's part of the deal. And then especially in NA, I have a friend who's also an addict, and he's an NA because he had a big problem with drugs. And the woman he fell in love with was in NA, and they had a baby, and she went back out and died at an OD. Oh, so that's geez. Another thing. Yeah, baby at home and everything. So it's heavy, you know, and you know, there's a lot of people that, especially in NA, but if you show up and you get some support and you talk to somebody and you have get somebody's phone number, you know, those people, that they live for that meeting, you know. And there's people that don't work, they just go to meetings, and you know, they get help from others, or they get, you know, ODSP or whatever they're on.
And you can go to two, three meetings a day, like wherever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Some days I went to three meetings, like, because, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to miss tomorrow because I really can't go. I have an appointment with whoever. I remember when I was in front of the judge and I pled guilty. So it's on my record and everything, but it's a crazy moment in your life, but you have to do all these things. It's like, you know, you have to go to like these courses after you get arrested for drinking and driving. It's like you go to a course and you have to learn this and you have to do this. And
it's
heavy. It's amazing. Amazing. And I think about it now, I'm so glad I'm talking about it, because it's like, you know, you forget where you know where you were. It was wild.
And it's such an accomplishment too, to get through it, because it does take a lot of time and a lot of work and a lot of persistence and a lot of courage and a lot of being vulnerable in tough moments when you really don't want to and you really don't feel like it and you want to just tell everybody to fuck off and mind their own business, and you gotta throw it up, you know.
Yep.
You gotta throw it all up.
And it's a daily process. It's not like, you know, I'm free of it, right? Like it's once you let your guard down a little bit, that's when things start creeping in. If I just had a drink, if I just had a beer, Wendy, you know, and then, you know, 6 months later, I'm, you know, homeless, you know, you never know, but right. But it is true. Like in my mind, I beat it. But it's just because I know that where I was, and I'm never going back there, you know.
And you mentioned the 90 meetings in 90 days, and I know I was talking to you, I had the chance to talk to, you know, as you know, Jake the Snake Roberts, and we're talking a little bit about addiction as well too, and that's one of the key things that he said really worked for him too, is the 90 meetings in 90 days. What can people expect when they're going through that 3 month process, that 90 days process, and you know, getting a sponsor and things like that, and you know, the emotions that come up, you're gonna, I would assume you can expect a little bit of frustration and anxiety, and I'm sure anxiety is on a
everything.
Whole other
every
level.
Emotion, every emotion. You're sad, you're happy, you're frustrated, you're feeling down about yourself, you just have a plethora of things. Think about your, you know, everything that you've ever done in your life that was shitty or you felt shitty about is going to come up, right? And the 90 meetings in 90 days, and thank God Jake the Snake did it, because, you know, I love that guy. And then, you know, it was funny when you told me that you did interview, and then I watched it, of course. But 90 meetings in 90 days is such a great thing for somebody who's result oriented too, like I am. I took it as a, because when you go for your first meeting, you get a chip. But if you go for a whole month, you get another chip. And if you go for 2 months, you get another chip. And if you go for 3 months, you get another chip. And then I was like, okay, now you got me. But it was still the very, very much the most challenging thing I've ever done, because you're vulnerable, and you have to talk to people you don't know. I mean, I was easy, that came easily, but in this situation, it was not, because you know, you're talking to someone who you may not know, and you actually won't know, and you're giving them everything. Everything's on it.
Yes.
Here it is, you know, and you're like,
was that easier or harder because you don't know them? Was that easier or difficult?
I think it was easy for me. I was ready, and I was ready to spit it all out and get rid of it. I mean, still carry some of it, but we all carry things, right? But it's, but you, at least you can, I can call my sponsor and say, you know, I fucking feel like shit today. And some, I sponsor a few people also, but and that's the other thing that's great about it, right? Is it's cyclical. It's, you know, you get back what you get. Yeah, no, it's very hard. It's the best thing you'll ever do, and it's the worst thing you'll ever do, because it's hard. It's not easy to get sober.
Yeah,
it's easy to get drunk. It's very hard to get sober.
Yeah, just insert liquor. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
Being vulnerable is hard, right? Like you go through it every day. I mean, it's for anybody. So to be someone who completely is out of choices, out of answers, and tell somebody that, like, heavy
duty. What are the big things that you notice in contrast from where you were when you were drinking as to where you are now in terms of just everyday life?
I think the being present is definitely, like I mentioned earlier, but I never feel like shit. I'm always sharp, always 100% walking out the door. I mean, I'm tired now, but that's a different thing because of the girls. But best thing ever too. That's the other thing too, that I take a ton of pride in, is that my girls are never going to see me drunk, never.
Yes,
that's another. It's a new thought of the. The thing is, like, now that's another motivational way to look at not drinking, because even my girls can always call me and say, I'm here. I need to pick up. Okay. Come on. You know, and never see me in my worst state, or where I'm angry, or if I have, you know, you say something you shouldn't say, or, you know, see me that the, you know, when someone's drunk, right? Even when you're a kid. Yep. Right?
Even when you're a kid. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that I take a lot of pride in that, because Megan isn't a drinker. She'll have a she's one of those people that'll share a little can of beer with somebody. It used to drive me nuts. I'm like, how the fuck are you guys sharing a drink? You know, I'd had four, you know, and they like, but that was the thing, right? Like, you're just you're so immersed in the lifestyle that you don't even think about it. Like, people normally, like in the normal way, don't have four beers at a 7-year-old's birthday party, right? Like,
right.
It's but that was not my normal, right? And that, yeah, there's so many things that have changed in for the better. Just presence, commitment, not lying, being a good friend, being a good brother, being a good son, and then being a good partner is like the number one thing. And now being a really, really sick dad, really good dad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you can take pride in that too. And in being a good partner, as you said, and it makes you feel good. And that's the new high. You feed off of that. You feed off of just being a good person, and still knowing that you're going to have challenging days. You're going to have, you know, times when you're like, just fuck this. And that's just, you know, everything's just, you get upset or you get frustrated, or those days will still come. And that's, I think, innate to every human on the planet, whether you're sober or not, whether you're addicted or not. I think everybody has those. I had one of those days the other day. I was like, fuck this day and everybody in it. And I was like, it was just wasn't having it. It just wasn't my day.
Yeah.
You know, but giving yourself that grace to feel that feeling in the moment and then just get through it and let it go. And, and it's amazing how, I think probably for you too, is the most beautiful thing is hearing when you're talking about the relationships that you have with people and how that's grown so beautifully and exponentially and so much more rewarding and fulfilling.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's, I'm so blessed with the friends that I do have and the family that I have, and, you know, meeting new people like yourself and meeting new people like every day on our old, like our music podcast. And it's just a blessing, like being so present and being a good person and being a good friend and thinking about others more than yourself. It's so good. It's the best. You never, you know, you'll feel your best, like when you give back, like, you know, You post about that young lady that is fighting cancer, and it's just like heartbreaking because life is so precious. And I have a friend also who has a son who's been he's had cancer 4 times. He's like 7 years old. It's like it's absolutely, so important to be kind. So important, especially now. Like everybody's like, fuck the left and fuck the right, and this is the I hate that person. I hate that person. It's like, whoa. Okay. Are you okay? Like let's have a discussion. Like you can't be this hateful. Like there's so many things to be blessed about. But what I was getting at is you never feel better than when you're giving back, right? Like you see somebody who's begging on the street and you buy them a sandwich and you have a discussion with them for 5 minutes. I speak to a lot of homeless people just because it's I know that there's addiction involved, and I know that there's some of them, my uncle was schizophrenic, so he lived in all the streets sometimes. So I take that time. I don't like just give them money and leave. Like I want to see how are you? How are you? And let's leave. What can I do for you? You want a sandwich? Are you hungry? And if they, if they have teeth, then I'll help them and get them something or get them a smoothie or something. But yeah, you do your best. You do your best, but you never feel better than when you're giving back.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the quality of your friendships are just changed
Yeah.
too, and support that lifestyle, the support and the love that you have now is incredible. I always think of I don't know if you hear any of Joey Diaz's stuff, but he
Love
always
Joey Diaz.
oh, he's so great. He
You
always
don't need to love people. You could just need
you
three
just need three
motherfuckers, and you'll take over the whole
motherfuckers,
world. Yeah. I love him.
that's it.
I love him so
And
much.
it's so true because you mentioned earlier, when you were drinking, you're a super social, super popular guy, you had all these friends, and then you get sober and you lose a bunch of friends, and it's like that can be jarring too. Even though these people aren't good for you, it's you've had those friendships for X number of years and now they're not there anymore. And that can be, you got to let that go too. You got to process that. But it's not it's important for people to realize it's not the quantity of the people in your life or the friends in your life. It's the quality of those relationships that are really important. So
Absolutely. Yeah.
yeah, absolutely be prepared
Welcome
for
to my circle, Jenny.
that.
You're in. Can't wait to meet you actually, because you're in Toronto. Next time I'm in Toronto, we'll go for a coffee. It's
Yeah,
the proverbial.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We'll talk to 15 people, homeless people on the way too, so we'll make a day of it.
We should. Yeah. Honestly, it's nice to take a minute and because they're suffering, and it
There
sucks.
is a
So
lot. Yeah, there is a lot. And I think, not to sound cliche, but these are unprecedented times and people are experiencing, we talked a little bit about it last time about the cost of living and you're absolutely right. People are really struggling out there. People who have,
they're
two, 3 years
angry.
ago were doing fine, comfortable, living comfortably, and now can't, are having trouble just keeping a roof over their head and food on the table and,
Relationships and
relationships. And, you can understand how people turn to making choices that are not good for them. It's understandable, but I think the message that you try to bring is that, you said it right at the top of the show, walking into one of those meetings and hearing people's stories, is that the message is that you're not alone. And whatever you think you've done that you think is bad or wrong, someone out there is going to top it. And the person coming in behind you thinks that they've done something horribly wrong and bad, and then they hear your story and they think, oh well, fuck, okay, I'm not so bad. So we all live in this space where we think, we're ashamed. You talk about shame. We're ashamed or we're embarrassed or we feel bad or this, that, and the other thing, but we've all been through those experiences in our life in different ways. And there's always someone, who's been through it twice over. And there's always someone who has been through it, maybe, you don't think quite as bad that you feel you could help them through, So, I remember a friend in school saying, I wouldn't want my problems and you wouldn't want mine. So,
It's
and
a
that's,
great line. Great
yeah,
line.
You know, that's another one of those things I never forgotten enough. Yeah. You know, you never know what goes on behind closed doors. And, you know, everybody has pain. You know, everybody has pain. Everybody has great experiences and not so great experiences. And who are we to judge what's, you know, there's no scale of 1 to 10, who has it worse or who has it better.
That's
It's
right.
individual. It means your pain means something to you and my pain means something to me. But you're not alone, and those meetings are really, really accessible for people. There's always going to be coffee. We know that.
Yeah, oh yeah, there's always coffee. They're accessible for even people that are at home. You know, they do Zoom AA meetings,
That's amazing. That's
which was a
great.
which. Yeah, which was helpful during the pandemic for sure. There was a lot of people that went back out, unfortunately, because they didn't have access to Zoom and we weren't allowed to have AA meetings, which was kind of a shitty deal. But there's access to those. You know, you can go to in Ottawa. There's a place in Ottawa downtown at the Bronson Centre that you can go in there and you can get a list of meetings. Like the and you could even go to you get you know if you go to a meeting and you ask someone there to maybe print you off all of the meetings because they're every day the same time for certain places. Some of them are Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I know that my home group is Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then I found other meetings too, but they're out there and they all accomplish the same thing. And that's just getting your butt in the chair and be open and be vulnerable and don't worry. You know, everybody in there gives a shit. Like there's certain things that, you know, like you said, everybody's got their own shit and everybody's got their own bottom. You know, my bottom was being arrested. Some people's bottom is they lose someone or they've killed someone or they've done something bad, really bad. And it just and some of them are just like, you know, housewives that started drinking during the day or like men that were drinking at work or, you know, dealing with stress or dealing with bullshit, you know, and it's tough, man, but all I can say is you are worth it. You know, you are worth it. Like
100%,
just
100%.
remember that.
Yeah, 100%. And I've got some dogs too. You might hear them in the
Yeah. My little
background.
Aussie Shepherd or Pretzel.
Brian Stevenson is he wrote a book, but he's human rights lawyer, and he always says, "You're more than the worst thing you've ever done." And I
Oh,
just think
that's good.
that's, yeah, I just think that's a really good quote.
That's a great quote.
I just before we wrap up here, because I know your time is valuable, and I really appreciate you being here today to talk
Thank you
about
for having
this.
me. No, it's great.
What are maybe some just little key throwouts of advice or little key things that if someone's listening to this and has a loved one that's going through addiction, or maybe they're in an active addiction themselves and on the fence about going to a meeting or not knowing where to go for help, or what's something that you could just give them as sort of a little push as a deciding factor where they should.
I think when we're doing something wrong, we know we're doing something wrong, whatever it is. And you have to realize that if you feel like you're doing something wrong, you are. And if it's not working and you haven't made any progress in life and in general, and you're not focused enough and you feel like you're being abusive to another person verbally or you're being abusive to yourself verbally and then in turn abusing alcohol or abusing drugs because of that, or you had an issue as a young person with someone or whatever it is. I think that the key is just go to a meeting. Don't take a chip right away. You don't have to unless you want to. And that's what people tend to do by the end of it when they start. Who has 9 months, who has 6 months, who has 3 months, who has 2 months, who has 1 month, and who wants to take a change in their life, make a change in their life. But just go, and there's Al-Anon too for those who are or who live with an alcoholic or live with someone that's abusing a drug of some sort. And those are nice meetings to go to for somebody that is there. And if the person is not willing to change themselves, it's time to start considering getting the fuck out of there. And I'm sorry to say it, but it is the way it is.
It's truth.
And because an alcoholic or a drug addict, they won't, you can't choose for them. Like,
right.
Like I was saying, I don't canvas people that I know are having trouble. If they called me and asked me, I said, yeah, go to a meeting and then go to a few more. And then, you know, we'll get her done. And that's it.
How long is typically is a meeting? How long?
About an hour.
About an hour. Yeah. So it's totally doable. Totally doable. Doable. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can sit anywhere. If you,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I think it's incredibly, incredibly brave for you to not only share your story, but to have made that initial discovery for yourself and taken accountability and made the choice to be proactive about changing your life in such a positive way. And I think what an amazing gift you've given to your partner and to your kids and to every person in your life who loves and cares about you. It is the most amazing gift you, how so much love you have for them to give them that gift of you being a better person and getting on track. So thank you, and I'm proud of you. And thanks for joining me today on the podcast. This is great, and I know it's gonna help a lot of people.
Thank you, Jenny. It's I'm so grateful for you to have me, and thank you for saying such kind words. And I'm lucky to have gotten sober for sure, because I would get to speak to amazing people like yourself and also be present, like I was saying. And again, if you know, somebody can send me a DM or something if they have any trouble with drinking or drugs and want to know what to do.
Yeah, you want to
especially not where... especially.
Yeah, people can.
Yeah, so my Instagram is at James Bars Angus, BARSSANGUS. It's mostly real estate stuff that's on there, but you can, if you sent me a private message, I'll answer you. And if you're on Ottawa, I'll even go to a meeting with you. So
that's
give me
awesome.
Give me a shout.
And you'll even sign their coffee cup for them if you want.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, they're styrofoam. We don't use styrofoam anymore. They use real cups, which is good.
That's cool. Do you carry buy 10 glossies with you too? Is it just the, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had headshots done in like 99. So excellent. I still look the same.
Exactly the same. Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Jenny. I appreciate you doing this. This is a great podcast. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I love it. And I'll tag you on everything, and we'll put your info at the bottom too, so people can reach out to you. So that's great.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, James. Have an amazing, amazing week ahead.
And you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.